On ABC Radio National Summer, Amanda Smith with you with Artworks and a feature that's in praise of drawing. Drawing liberates the imagination and generates a fire and energy that finished paintings don't necessarily have. That's what the French writer Diderot thought. Michelangelo urged his students to draw, draw, and don't waste time. Even Picasso filled hundreds of notebooks with his lines and sketches. And of course, drawing is something that we all do in some way or other, whether it's doodling while you're talking on the phone or in a meeting, or drawing someone a map for directions. But what's the place of drawing in contemporary art, in new media and screen and installation art? Is there a place for drawing in the new art and new ideas? Deanna Petherbridge is a UK-based artist and writer and curator who spent her whole life drawing and thinking about drawing. She's the author of an impressive and impressively large book called The Primacy of Drawing. In it, she explores the historical role of drawing, its relationship to the sciences, its role as a preparation for other art forms, for painting and architecture and design, as well as being an art form in its own right. For Artworks, Deborah McCoy is speaking with Deanna Petherbridge, first about one of the enduring myths on the origin of painting, as told by the first century Roman writer Pliny the Elder.
The story is really about the origin of drawing, and over the centuries it's been regarded as the origin of painting as well. But I'm very particular that this has to do with line. And it's a very simple story. That Butardus, who is a potter of Corinth, his daughter's lover was going off to war, and she invented drawing in the sense that she drew an outline of his shadow on the wall. And this was very popular in the early Renaissance, and again extremely popular in the 18th century. And it's a story really about loss, as well as anything. He goes away, and therefore she wants to catch his outline, his profile, his portrait. So I think there's a long Western tradition of the notion that mimesis, representation, is something to do with catching likeness and therefore to do with loss. More, I've tended to look at it just at this notion that it's a line. And of course, there is no line in nature. Line is a total abstraction, which can be made just by scratching a line, of course, in the sand, or a piece of charcoal on the wall. And the charcoal is an extremely archaic implement when you come to think of it. It's just a bit of burnt wood. Pliny, in another story, talks about somebody actually snatching a piece of wood out of the fire to make a drawing. So it's a myth, and it's only a myth about how line gets invented and how line is implicated in this notion of representation.
Perhaps we find sketches so attractive only because, being somewhat indeterminate, they allow more liberty to our imagination, which sees in them whatever it likes. Denis Diderot.
Leonardo also talks quite substantially in little snatches in his various writings about the importance of doing something very quickly to catch an idea before it leaves your mind. He talks about the inchoate sketch, which has to be drawn out of the imagination. And so it is a factor right really from the 14th, 15th century. Every century has a different way of dealing with this question, even before Diderot, that is, dealing with this question that a sketch is so important for invention, for trying to put on the things that are very, very difficult to get out of the imagination.
I believe that a simple line can define passion. The questioning eye and imagination is pleased to complete that which is suggested by the unfinished sketch.
So drawing, as you see it then, critical in the way that you might conceive of something or develop an idea.
Absolutely. It can do everything, really. The very rough first sketch is a thing for an artist, a designer, an architect, to put down the first ideas on the paper. But then, of course, a sketch can lead, It's linear, so it leads, it's serial, it automatically leads to another drawing in which the artist is then tempted to do study drawings, to do a whole series of drawings, to develop different notions, different parts of the body if it's going to be figurative, different parts of a composition if it's going to be a great work. Drawing is both a preparation for painting, for sculpture, for printmaking, for works in other media, and it's also a work in its own right.
And how do you, as an artist, Deanna, navigate this? I mean, can you think without something in your hand with which to draw?
I confess I've been thinking on a computer screen these days, and on a, I've learned to think both ways. But I think there's a difference in writing theoretically and investigating and reading that kind of thinking and the other kind of thinking that happens when you have a very simple implement in your hand, like a pencil or pen and ink. Obviously, when I'm drawing, the idea only comes with that action of the hand.
But when you're thinking, that is, when you're writing, that the same kind of stimulation happens with a keyboard?
It's a very, very different activity. And I must say, because over the years I have supervised students doing PhDs, and I notice in this country quite a lot of artists are doing PhDs, where they are both presenting studio work and they're also having to theorize it. They're also presenting a written text. And I do know from myself and I know from other students that they're very different activities and they're very difficult to combine.
What would you compare it to? I mean, I think immediately of, for example, playing an instrument and singing. They're similarly creative but require completely different kinds of ways of thinking and even potentially different parts of the brain. Being active.
Absolutely. It is that. Which is not to say that drawing, of course, at the moment that you're seeking for the idea with the pencil, that doesn't mean to say that it can't be very, very conceptual, that it can't be concerned with ideas. In fact, I do make the point throughout Primacy of Drawing that drawing itself is very much a conceptual act and has always been regarded as so by people who've written about it. And by the way, I quote artists writing about drawing throughout my book. And the point is that really artists were supplanted, I expect, in the 18th century by art historians. But anybody who's written about this act of making has also had to know how to make. And my book is very much a history of practice.
Well, can we talk about one of the examples, which is supposedly from the French romantic painter Delacroix? And it is some advice, really, that he gave supposedly to an aspiring artist. Can you recall that story?
Yes, I can. And I mean, it's Baudelaire, and it's very funny because Delacroix actually said to the artist...
Now, this was Baudelaire recalling Delacroix's comments, is that what happened?
Yes. Yes. And supposedly he'd said to an aspiring artist, unless you can catch very, very quickly somebody falling out of a fourth-story window and actually manage to draw them before they crash to the ground, you won't get anywhere, implying that an artist has to have that immense skill of doing something very quickly. And it's a ridiculous story, but interestingly enough, I've discovered it's a topos, that is, it's a theme that reappears again and again in history of art in the West. It's quite a common notion that an artist needs the skill of speed, and within that speed is something that can only happen in drawing, and that is altogether with inspiration and, of course, with a trained eye.
But it is, as you say, it's sort of improbable and impossible, but it's such a strong visual image, isn't it? You know precisely what he means. You can see that man or that person falling out of the fourth floor window.
It's amazing. And in fact, a very beautiful Rembrandt drawing, which is in the British Museum, and I know it quite well, depicts an old man with a little baby standing on his lap. And there are two drawings, and the above drawing, and they've obviously been drawn immensely quickly, shows the baby has succeeded in snatching off the old man's skull cap. And the old man is looking down with a sort of amazing expression of a chagrin and amusement. And all of this has happened just in two little drawings. Now, no doubt Rembrandt sketched something very quickly, and then he came back. You can see he's returned to the drawing. He strengthened some of the lines, and he's made it into a more coherent drawing than the speed originally would have allowed. But I think that very quick drawing, that active speed, is absolutely essential for catching ideas and also for catching resemblances.
But then there is the danger of the sketch. The urgency, that fervour of the sketch is dangerous too. Well, at least John Ruskin, who was the famous 19th century critic and writer, in one part of his critique of drawing, he linked that quick sketch, that hasty sketch, to a moral discussion about hard work. He did see drawing as the quality of a mature genius, and he was concerned that it could be a polluting characteristic for the young.
And in fact, it was in France too during academic times. There was also a sort of French, very stern discourse about exactly the same thing. It said students can't do the sorts of things that mature painters can do. They have to work hard, and sketching and enjoyment has got nothing to do with acquiring skill. So I think Ruskin is very much in a long tradition as well. On the one hand, people admire the sketch. On the other hand, the sketch is also dangerous, and I love that.
The way in which a number of painters have let themselves be carried away by the pleasure of drawing. They have succumbed to the temptation of dashing their ideas down on paper. Yet no matter how dexterously these artists sketch, there is still no denying that they are indulging in an artistic licentiousness for which they must be censured. Comte de Caluche.
This is the Artworks feature on ABC Radio National and online. Diana Petherbridge's book is called The Primacy of Drawing, Histories and Theories of Practice. So, Diana, if Ruskin and others, as you say in your book, opposed drawing in the young as opposed to the mature, accomplished artist, how did you get to be an accomplished artist unless you were able to draw?
Exactly. But I'm afraid we live in an age, perhaps less so here in Australia, but certainly very strongly in Britain, where artists aren't taught drawing and they aren't taught skills in art schools. The importance of the conceptual is so overriding, and the importance, I must say, of new media are considered so sexy and so interesting, that artists don't know how to draw. They don't want to draw and they don't know how to. And in a way, my book is also on a crusade because I'm very much addressing this. And I'm saying unless artists have those quick skills and those mature skills and those concentrated skills, they can't really come up with new ideas. I suggest this right at the end of the book. It's my little moral Ruskinian moment. Mm-hmm. I say unless you draw, you're not going to move anything on. You're just going to be reproducing the same old thing.
But this is a very complicated case to mount because, as you said, when you sit down to write, you're sitting down in front of a computer keyboard or a mouse and you are thinking and creating also. It's different from your creation with pen and ink, for example, but it's still a creative exercise. And increasingly, the screen and screen-based art is what interests people. As you say, it's sexy, it's engaging, it's of the moment.
Yes, my problem with it, in a way, is that it means recycled imagery, because it, more than even having to draw something laboriously on a screen, people use and work with recycled imagery, and I'm talking about time-based imagery, not only single images, but things that happen in time and videos and so on. And it seems to me it's so easy to keep reproducing those things which somebody else has invented. I think invention has to happen through the individual, and I think great art is about new invention. I'm seeing a lot of stale work going on in Europe, in America. I mean, it is a global world, and there's very little that's very new. A lot of it is very stale and secondhand.
What do you mean by that? Because I'm sure the practitioners would see their work as being certainly based on what's gone before, as everything is, but also about a new challenge or a new idea or taking it into new territory?
what can we say? This is a critical moment, and it's a critical matter. And let's hope they will move on to new things. But I do think so much contemporary art is actually about installation or about found imagery or making about film and so on. And it's not necessarily about the kind of invention of something completely new going a new way, which I think art was. Think of the great inventions of modernism, the changeover from 18th and 19th century to modernist abstraction and through cubism. And that was an amazingly interesting and inventive age.
But how was it viewed at the time? I imagine its reception in the time of its making was also disputed and contested.
Of course, all art is always contested, and what I'm saying is worthy of contestation, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you advise then? I mean, as you say, your book is very much in praise of drawing. It is about the importance of drawing to the whole creative enterprise. What do you say then about it now in its relationship to the new? How can it be part of new art or new ideas?
Well, I think it can be, for the simple reason that drawing, as I've said, can exist in its own right. It's a work in its own right. Even a quick sketch has meaning and can exist in its own right. But it's also, it has this dual activity. It can be preparatory for things in a completely different other media. It can be even preparatory for inventions of different kinds of media. So I think in that sense, because drawing... And drawing, as I keep saying, is an abstraction. A line doesn't exist in the natural world. But for pulling something out of your mind and giving it a form which can then be reinvented somewhere else, even if that form is also words and texts and so on, or combinations of shapes and words, I think this really does give you the ability to really move somewhere else. Whereas how many times can you reinvent what to do with, let's say, an installation of established objects? You reconfigure them, you put them together. I've seen so many installations of my life, and they begin to look more and more similar. So many things in vitrines, butterflies in vitrines, I've seen so many of them. I think at the moment when you can draw something entirely new, and invent something entirely new and then find a new way of inventing it. That is really, I think, what we need and what is rather problematic at the moment with a lot of contemporary art.
What about screen-based, video-based work? Is that not new territory?
No, I don't think it is. I think it's rather ancient territory at this point.
You mean because it's about film, it continues to be?
No, simply because, people can make beautiful and moving work. I'm not condemning the whole thing. But I'm simply saying that I do have problems, and we're getting away from drawing here, Deborah. But I do have problems when I go into exhibitions where the kind of concentration you do, say, looking at a drawing or a painting or a sculpture, and the different kinds of time concentration you need to look at a time-based work, and they're in the same space. And I don't think they're about the same things. I find it very difficult walking around an exhibition contemplatively to suddenly be forced to go into a dark room and to spend 20 minutes chained to somebody else's time. I think it's a very manipulative, and in some ways there's a lot of power in you are forced to see it from beginning to end. Of course, you can walk out. Whereas that other moment out of time, which happens contemplating a drawing, where you reinvent it, you can see how it's been made. That's a really important aspect, you know, this question of unfinish about a drawing. There's always a sense that you can retrace how it's been made. You can rub out a line, but there's normally a trace on the paper where the thing has been erased. So you're coming very close to how it was made, and that enchanting moment when you can see how something was made, where it's leading, where it came from, as well as contemplating what it does for you, gives you an enormous complexity of response to the work. And very often a time-based work doesn't allow you for exactly that same freedom.
And with drawing, of course, people are close to it because we all draw, not
exactly.
Well, but we have an experience of drawing, and so therefore we can understand and in some ways identify with that form.
Absolutely. And I do in one of my chapters, because I talk a lot about materials, and I do say we all know, everybody knows throughout the world, I imagine, what it's like to pick up a biro and the kind of funny, skinny line you make with a biro and the interruptive marks when you pick up your pen from the paper. And you know how that is different from, say, working with a piece of charcoal. So I think we all have that expression. We do it. We automatically write. We learn to write. We learn to shape. So I think we do. It's a very democratic means. Everybody has that expression. And therefore, being so open-ended, being so democratic, again, it's a thing that people can invent in without stopping to think. It's not an inhibiting medium. At least it shouldn't be.
Let no day pass over you without a line. Be ready to put into your table book, which you must always carry about you, whatever you judge worth of it, whether it be in the earth or in the air or upon the waters, while it is fresh in your imagination.
The only point about drawing every day is like anything, like playing a musical instrument, like being a dancer, like being an actor. I simply think that familiarity with your medium, where it becomes part of your breathing, part of your raison d'être, it feeds how you actually exist in the world. I think that makes it so much easier then to go and do another work. Otherwise, artists, and we all know this, if you haven't been working in the studio for a long time, you've got to spend weeks and weeks getting back into it, throwing out things, sweeping out the studio, feeling despairing. So that act of drawing all the day, every day, is simply an experience of being in touch with your own skills and your own creativity.
Is there a difference, though, from the dancer who must practice every day or the musician who must practice every day in terms of the dexterity and where you put your fingers and the timing and all of those complicated things around being a musician?
I don't think there is a difference.
So drawing is, I'm sort of postulating that drawing might be slightly different in that it's about thinking outside what you're doing in some ways.
Yes, but I think that's those proprioceptive mm-hmm. activities where the hand just knows what to do, in the sense that when you're playing on the piano, for example, and I do play the piano myself, and I know I've been playing for about 4 or 5 hours, and I don't have to think about every note, and my hands take over. I think that same activity happens in drawing, and I think that freedom is the moment when the juices really start working and new things start happening. I don't think there's a great difficulty. I mean, we always talk about the difference between the inventive and the other kinds of arts, where you're interpreting a score or something written by somebody else. But the artist is doing both things. They're inventing their score, but they also have to have the skills to bring that invention well out of mind onto the paper.
By distancing itself from all possibilities of sensuality and the physicality of solid matter, drawing becomes closest to the actual working of the mind.
And the Primacy of Drawing, Histories and Theories of Practice is published by Yale University Press. The author is Deanna Petherbridge, and she was speaking with Deborah McCoy. Details for the book are on the Artworks website, abc.net.au/rn/artworks. I'm Amanda Smith. You're listening to ABC Radio National Summer.